Hello, and welcome to the Atheist Podcast. If you want to have an open and honest discussion where your opinion will not be judged, you have come to the right place. I'm Jonathan, and we will be discussing beliefs, non-beliefs, and any questions dealing with religions. My co-hosts are George, John, along with our intrepid producer, Robert. And we are the Atheist Podcast. Well, hello, listeners. How are you doing tonight? Tonight, we're going to not do a Bible reading. We're going to have an interview. Tonight, we have John, our theist of the bunch. We're going to be talking to him, trying to get a little bit of background to see what actually makes John tick, which is really a good subject of interest for me. We're going to do this. How are you doing tonight, John?
I made it through the week, and I'm here. Weather's getting nice here in New England, and I'm starting to enjoy it.
It's getting that way here in Pennsylvania, too. Was actually driving around today, and I started looking around and seeing the trees are starting to turn, you know, starting to turn colors. Oh, I love fall. I don't know about you, but I absolutely love it.
Fall's the time of year I wait for. You know, I work for the post office, so I'm in my wheelhouse right now.
Fall actually has to, you working at the post office, that actually has to be the perfect time of year for you. It's not hot, it's not cold, it's not raining, it's not snowing. It has to be the time of the year to be a postal worker.
For me it is.
No?
Oh, no, it absolutely is. This is like I said, it's the time of year I wait for. I can't stand the heat. You know, the summer, everybody always talks about the summer being, you know, wonderful, this and that, but I hate it. I hate sweating. I hate all that. An inch of snow or to 90 degrees any day.
Well, what's your oath that you have to swear for the post office?
I did not have to swear an oath, and therefore, you know, I should be able to sit at home on the couch in the rain and the sleet and the dark of night and whatever the other ones are.
Now, do you actually deliver, or are you just an office worker?
No, I deliver. I'm a carrier. I have a nice, actually, for the past 7 or 8 years, I was delivering in a rather urban area, and which really wasn't bad. I mean, I stayed there longer than I didn't have to, because, you know, even though the area wasn't so great, the people were nice, it was flat, and it was an easy delivery. Maybe 8-9 months ago, I decided it was time for a change. And so I'm delivering now to a nice single-family neighborhood.
Now, I know this is something that this is a little bit off. Well, it's not really off the subject since we're just talking to each other. What's the weirdest thing you've seen as a carrier? I know you have a story of some sort that's just really off the wall.
I got a couple. I've delivered to an apartment building where right after I was done, there was shots fired in the parking lot. There was a drug deal gone bad. Yep. I stepped out of the vehicle getting ready to deliver a spot there, and I was almost run over by a high-speed police chase. I've almost been knocked over by a suspect running through yards, evading the police, almost like right in front of me, right in front of my face. I could have reached out and grabbed him if I was paying attention. I would say the weirdest, I had a woman answer the door. I had something that needed to be signed for, and her shirt was like all kind of ripped, and there's not really a polite way to say it, but like half of her chest was hanging out.
Okay.
And she says, excuse my boob. but she said it. She said it a little dirtier than that. You have that, but I've been propositioned by multiple prostitutes. I've been asked to borrow money in exchange for services. That's what you get working in some of these neighborhoods.
It's a good thing that you're a good Christian, then.
Well, you know what? I take it with a grain of salt.
I would imagine that anybody that has to deal with people on a day-to-day basis like that in their personal spaces probably has to deal with the same thing. But, you know, you're a postal worker. I would put you on the same level as, like, a police officer or a fireman or something like that. There's something about a uniform.
Well, before this, I worked for the state. I was a deputy sheriff, and right after that, we became marshals. I had seen one of the kid that knocked me over in the foot pursuit was somebody that I had locked up.
Ma'am.
But different uniforms, you get people don't recognize you. So, got that going for you.
Well, personally, I was actually, you already know this, I was in the Marines and I also was in the Army, and 4 years difference and that kind of stuff. So one of the funny stories that I had was I used to take my Marine barracks cover, which is the white one with the gold emblem, with, you know, the eagle glowing anchor. And I used to put that in, as I was traveling, I would put that in the front dashboard. You cannot explain how many times I got out of tickets. Cop would walk up and he would look at that and he'd go, "You're a Marine?" "Yes, sir, I am." "Slow down. Go on."
I had the same thing happen to me. I was traveling down to Kentucky. I was maybe 21, 22 years old with a buddy of mine, and we were doing, I can't remember where, I believe it was in Kentucky or West Virginia, but we were doing about 130, and we got pulled over by the state police, and you should have seen the guy. He walked up, and he was madder than all get out, and, you know, I pulled out my license and everything else, and he saw the badge mark. He's like, "What's that there?" And I was like, "Well, I'm the deputy up in, you know, where I'm from." And it was weird because he almost sounded like all apologetic. Like, I don't know how in that state, you know, how much status the deputies have in that state. He's like, don't worry about it. Just, you go on ahead. Just be careful. Like, it was almost like he was sorry he wasted my time pulling me over doing almost 120, 130 miles an hour. It was crazy.
Well, to be honest, he probably didn't waste your time. He probably got you guys to think about what you were actually doing. Well, maybe 130 is not the best that we could do. Let's bring it down to about 75 or so.
And we did. We did for the rest of the ride. We kept it a lot closer to the speeding limit. No use testing the limit.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things whenever you're about my age or so, and, you know, it's one of those things whenever you're young, you're like, we can do this, right? Yeah, oh yeah, we can do this. Sure, let's do this.
And you know what? And that's exactly what it was, hey, you know what? Who cares? Let's see what happens. I mean, because I had never really gotten a ticket before. I mean, you know, having that particular badge, it sort of carried a lot of weight. You know, I was a little more irresponsible in my youth than maybe I should have been. So,
you know, and when you think about it, it's amazing that all of us didn't, you know, receive that Darwin Award. You know, we took our gene pool out of the gene pool.
I know. Think about that. Now we've passed our recklessness down. What are we doing?
I have 3 kids. I'm good now. And the weird thing is, now that I have 3 kids, I really don't want to do any of that stuff.
I know. I drive like an old man now.
Oh, me too. It's 55, 65, whatever the speed limit is, that's what I do now. Oh, my goodness. All right, now that we've steered off course so far, where did you grow up? Are you still in your same hometown? What? Who's John?
I am. And the town is currently on. At one point in time, they had like the largest strawberry field in the country for farming, or so I'm told. You know, there's large areas of the town that still have part of, you know, one side of the family's name. You know, there's streets and just areas. There's Rose Hill and Rose Street and things like that that are all throughout the town that sort of mark our history. But yeah, I've been in this town. I like it. It's growing. It still has that small town feel, but it's, you know, we got a pretty decent population, probably right around 40. It's developing. So it's a great place to live. Great schools, safe. You can walk around, lots to do.
Now I'm going to reach out there and I'm not going to reach out there. I'm going to make a reach here. I'm assuming your favorite Beatles song is Strawberry Fields.
I've never heard it. Or if I have, I wouldn't recognize it.
Oh!
I'm not a Beatles fan.
Oh! Trust me.
I'm not.
Well, I mean, it's Strawberry Fields.
Are they any good?
The Beatles? Here or there, you know. Some people them, some people don't, you know.
Yeah, it's one of those. I mean, I'm sure they're excellent. And you know what it is? They're one of those bands where you probably hear a song on the radio, like a song on the radio, and then you find out it's the Beatles.
Oh, no. Trust me, you've heard the song before. You just didn't realize that was who you were listening to.
Yeah.
No. Sorry, small pun there, I guess. Well, it's not really a pun. It's just an off weird joke sort of thingy. So what brought you to me? I mean, seriously, what brought you to me? I mean, we already know, we already have the background of the show itself. What made you be the theist of the show?
Well, a friend of mine, George, him and I know each other really only through the internet. We've never met. He's in Canada. I mean, we're not that far. I'm probably about as far away from him as I am from you.
Mm-hmm.
But we've never met. But we were sort of commenters on each other's blogs. And for years now, probably a good 5 or 6 years. What I liked about him was that, you know, he was a skeptic, he was an atheist, but he was reasonable. And you know, I'm not trying to say that not everybody is, but I mean, it stood out among the traffic that I would get, and we just sort of clicked. You know, on the stuff that we disagreed with. Very amicably, and we had that feeling where, you know, it was okay that we disagreed. We didn't hate each other, and it's been like that ever since. You know, I mean, we've talked through social media. We've had some pretty good in-depth discussions about life and just things in general, life in general. And I guess he knows you, or he knows somebody associated with this, and he pitched it, and I said, let's roll.
It is pretty interesting that we're having this conversation, like, what? We're on episode 8, well, this will be episode 9, and we're sitting down having a reasonable conversation, even though we may not theologically believe the same thing. I actually like the fact that we're able to sit down and have a reasonable conversation about theological matters. I wish Jay was here, I love that young man. He really is. I don't know if you think he's funny, but I think he's just absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, he's a trip. You know, I mean, he's good to have to lighten it up. I mean, he's got some good thoughts. I mean, he can form an opinion, but I like that every once in a while he just throw something out there to take you off the track in a great way, just to sort of lighten it up just a little bit.
And at 17 years old, he's dealing with, you know, us two old dudes that actually, you know, I try to be, you know, as much as I can be. I try to be neutral, but he'll throw something out there every now and then. It's just like, you just can't help. Yeah. Oh, he's such
it's great. It's great to have that dynamic in there. And you know what else, too, is it's nice to, you know, I mean, it's not like we're old. I mean, I'm 36, I'll be 37 in a couple of months. And it's nice to have that different perspective. I mean, I'm not the same person that I was when I was 17, 18, 19 years old. Not even close. And so it's nice to be able to deal with somebody on that younger, less experienced road, bringing in that perspective to such a broad and important subject.
Well, it's not even just, you know, I might be forgetting something here shortly. It's just, it's, again, I'm years old. It's just weird to have someone that young and to bring such a fresh perspective to the whole conversation. It's just, I have a almost 17-year-old. I'm not old. I have an almost 17-year-old, a 14-year-old, and a 9-year-old at the house. It's so insightful just to get inside of their minds, to talk to them, just to sit down and have a conversation with them. And I know you have one young one, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I have one little one, and she's 8, and I have a 14-year-old. That's another thing. That's a nice thing about the conversations that you would have with your kid and the conversations that I would have with my kids are, by nature, going to be very different than the conversations that we would have with Jay and have with us. So it's a little bit more out of it, I think, than having that same conversation with your own kids.
Well, we're not trying to raise Jay. Jay's already been raised, you know, and even at that, we wouldn't try to do that in the first place, you know. His parents have a completely different set of values that they would want to raise him with, just like you do and I do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just endlessly fascinating just to watch kids, just to watch them. Jay, as you listen to this, yes, we're calling you a kid, but you're good with us, I think.
So far, so good.
So far, yeah. So far, so good. As long as you can keep on talking and don't miss a verse every now and then. Speaking of, all right, let's get into the heart of the matter. Need a break?
No.
All right, that's an edit point for you, Robert. All right, now I know that you said, or whenever I first introduced you, you said that you initially were an atheist, and now that you've come to your own particular realization, now you are a hardcore theist. Explain that journey to me.
All right. Well, I think I would say more as an apathetic agnostic, where I didn't really have an opinion either way. My parents were divorced when I was young, when I was maybe 2 years old, 1.5, 2 years old, and I had lived with my mother. She had remarried maybe when I was 5 or 6, I think. But it was a very religiously neutral household. I mean, there was nobody was anti-religion or God or pro-religion or God. We went to church on some of the bigger holidays, probably Easter and Christmas. I don't really remember. But, you know, also when my grandparents would take me maybe once a month, once every couple of months, I'd go with them. When I was around 10, I moved in with my father, who was even more religiously neutral. I mean, there was no real talk of any religion. It never came up. It just, and, you know, just growing up all through high school, teenage years, I didn't have an opinion other than God probably exists. I mean, who knows if that was a cultural thing or if that was a cognitive thing, but I, you know, I figured God probably exists, but I never really thought anything more about that. It didn't really have any influence, so to speak.
Well, so do you think, well, I know you said that it didn't influence you, but do you think it might have influenced you later on? You know, I'm actually jumping ahead. I shouldn't ask that question just now. So you grew up in a, like you said, an apathetic household. How did that form your thoughts as a young man? You know, let's go to that next step, that 18 to, you know, 30-year-old growing up phase, you know.
Yeah, I don't, it's, and, you know, as far as I know, I don't know how much that did influence me. I think more so it was my parents' upbringing, you know, the values and everything that they had instilled. I think I still carry a lot of that with me.
Which I'm sure you probably don't mind whatsoever. I mean, there's some values there.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, honesty, integrity, family, you know, all the good ones. Don't steal, don't lie. It's not good to do any of that. Respect your elders. Respect the people around you. Don't litter. You know, I mean, all the great things that all every kid needs to learn. I would say, looking back on it, you know, nobody ever said, well, do this or don't do that because of, you know, religion or because God says you shouldn't. That was never really a thing. I don't think I ever associated that with religion, even though, I mean, I could probably have associated it if somebody had asked me.
Yeah, you can always retrofit just about anything, you know. Again, just go into that, you know, I'm trying to build up to the, I don't know exactly, whenever you became religious, that period between, you know, whenever John said, I'm going to be a Christian, and the period whenever, you know, the young adult, John, what was that like for you?
It was fun. You know, when I was in, I think it was probably around 23, 24 is when I had my aha conversion moment. But I mean, I wasn't a partier, you know. Maybe I was boring. I don't know if that was from upbringing or what. I didn't go out partying. You know, I turned 21, but I didn't go out staying out until 2, 3, 4 in the morning, you know, 3 or 4 nights a week. You know, I had people that I hung out with. And I didn't shy away from doing anything, you know, really for any particular reason. I was just very reserved. You know, I think my wife always described me as being an old man in a young man's body. And, you know, that probably, I mean, when we met, I was wearing these khaki pants and this, the first day I was great. The first day I was wearing this, it was a solid black Hawaiian shirt, and you could tell, like, through shadows that there was, like, palm trees or something on it. And it had these bamboo buttons. They were real bamboo buttons. And I think I said something. I said, hey, it's a pretty nice shirt, huh? Even has real bamboo buttons on it.
You really were an old man in a young man's body.
I was, and I said it like it was so impressive. Like no shirt has real bamboo buttons on it. I mean, but, you know, it was obviously charming enough. But, you know, I was wearing these khakis with these grandpa shoes and this button-down shirt, and I thought I was awesome. So.
That's actually the boasting the actual bamboo buttons is something I would do today.
I might too. Hey, these are real bamboo buttons here. You want to touch? Want to touch them?
Yeah, you know, does it? You know, considering that I grew up in Florida and am a Jimmy Buffett fan, of course I'd be like, yeah, bamboo button, sure, yeah.
It was great, you know. But I don't know. I don't really have anything that stands out in that particular era. You know, I think though that at least being agnostic in the point where I was open to the fact that God exists, I think that was probably an aid as far as leading to conversion. You know, I wasn't already opposed to the idea.
Well, going on to that, explain, you know, for those of us that are agnostic atheists, explain that. I know it's not a moment, you know, it's not a moment in your life, but there is a section of your life where it became evident to you that this is the truth. Can you explain? I mean, we've already hashed this over quite a bit in the podcast itself, so listeners, go back and listen to mine and John's arguments. I know it's, you said it's not a feeling before, but what's that? I don't have the vocabulary for it. What was that thing that made you say, I know that this is the truth?
Well, that's the thing is, and I think a lot of skeptics have this idea that there's just this one thing, like you're walking down the street, it's like tripping over an uneven curb or something. But, you know, and maybe for some people it is like that. For me, it was more of a cumulative, gradual coming to. So when I was working in the sheriff's department, there was a guy that I worked with. We had mentioned this before, but there was a guy I worked with. Turns out he was a pastor of a local church. And me, being the kind of guy that I am, I like to break stones, you know? I like to give people a hard time. So, you know, when I heard that, I'd asked what I thought at the time were tough questions, you know? And I couldn't give you an example, but they were probably theological questions such as, well, how do you know the Bible is true? How do you know that the stuff that's in there is supposed to be in there? You know, can you prove that God exists? Can you prove that such and such and such? So what I was fairly impressive at the time was the fact that he didn't give me these answers like, well, you know, the Bible says it, I believe it. Case closed. You know, he'd give me answers. He says, well, you know, he'd talk about the manuscripts. He would talk about some of the philosophical arguments for God's existence. You know, things like traversing the infinite, or you can't have an infinite past, or you need a beginning. You would talk about the cosmological
first
arc.
First cause.
Yeah, first cause, things like that. So right away, that in itself sort of shut off for me any ability to dismiss this guy as just a believer who isn't gonna take any criticism, and they're gonna take their ball and go home. You know, so he didn't mind sitting with me and answering the questions. And the things that he didn't know or didn't have a good answer for, he said, "Well, you know what? Let me give you this website. You know, and he gave me a website. Go check this out, and then see if you could find something that argues against it. And you take the two and you see what they both have to say." So he encouraged that sort of exploration. It wasn't, it just wasn't very closed. And I think that itself got me looking into it even farther than what I would try to give him a hard time about. So, you know, as you're going along, you develop your own questions. So you're looking something up and you see this and you say, "Oh, well, I didn't think of that. Well, what about such and such?" So now you're looking for the answer to this new question. And it was just over time that made me more and more open to the idea of going from, "God probably exists," to, "Wow, God probably exists."
One of the things that, and a lot of the skeptics out there that are listening to this, is you can't, and I know you've heard this before, you can't argue someone out of a position that they didn't reason themselves into. And I actually find it very admirable that you reasoned yourself into your position. So that's hat tip, sir. So
A lot of Christians will actually, they'll argue that you can't reason somebody into the kingdom. You know, they'll say you could love somebody into the kingdom, but you can't reason somebody into the kingdom.
I wouldn't argue that. Well, I can't argue that one way or the other. You know, some people actually do believe that you can't argue someone into believing, but there's always the exception to the rule.
Well, I think the arguments, what they do is they help break down the walls. You know, I mean, you can give me a challenge and I can give you an answer. That in itself isn't gonna bring you there. Because I find that, generally speaking, the skeptics that I talk to, it doesn't matter what answer I give. There's always, "Okay, well then this now." It's like, "Okay, well, I'll answer that." "Oh, okay, well, now it's this." So, I mean, I think most of all, there's an emotional barrier. I think that's true with everybody, because the reasoning that only gets you so far. You still have to make the choice to bend the knee. And I think that there's a lot of, there's something psychological or emotional for that, because it wasn't simply the arguments that brought me in, so to speak. I had a few things, you know, happen. Okay, so I had lost my job a bunch of years ago, and it was this particular friend of mine who was the pastor. This is just one of the examples. There's like three or four things, like, really right in a row, and I mean, like, within a week. You know, I was out of work for 2 years, and I ended up going into the courthouse just to say hi. He happened to be at the side door entrance where he never is. He's never once in his whole 20 years of working there ever worked that side door entrance. He happened to be at the side door entrance. So we're sitting there, and he was only there for maybe 5 minutes. He was only supposed to be there for about 5 minutes because somebody was using the bathroom or something. So he ended up praying for me. That next day, right after he did that, I ended up getting my job back. All my back pay, all this other stuff. I was wrongly terminated. So, I mean, it was coming anyway. But the fact that I was waiting for over 2 years, this happened that next day. A couple of days after that, I get the call from the post office. you know, offering me this job. You know, I just started getting flooded with things. There was a couple other things, but it was, I think that I would say would be, if I was going to say that there was an aha moment, it was there. That was probably the straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak.
Well, I won't ever try to deny anything that you say. You know, I mean, your story is as valid as anyone else's, and if regardless of whether or not we argue in the future, or we have in the past, or we have different views, that kind of stuff, I will never ever try to diminish the experience that you had. I mean, I won't ever do that, John. This is my personal confession to you. You know, I won't ever try to diminish that. That is a very, very powerful story. And my heart kind of dropped because, you know, I've lost a job that I've been doing for a long time before. So my heart kind of dropped. So I won't ever try to diminish that for you.
Yeah. And you know what? I can understand a lot of people might want to chalk it up as a coincidence. It was just one of those things where, for me, it was very difficult to let that go as a coincidence. I mean, 2 years I'm out of work. I'm unemployable. I couldn't find anything. Couldn't get somebody to even give me a second look because, I mean, you're going from a state job to what? I mean, without getting into all the details. So for 2 years, and then all of a sudden, this guy who you know is clergy, so to speak, prays for you next day to get your job back, and you find out they're giving you 2 years worth of back pay, sick time, vacation time, all this other stuff that maybe just when you're really about to break.
You're at your wit's end, essentially.
Really, I mean, if we didn't have my father helping us out with the mortgage and stuff, you know, we would have lost the house. So it's just one of those things where that was the bottom. That was it. That was the thing that unlocked the door.
So that was your bottom. Now that you're where you're at now, what's your top? What now is the thing that you set your hat on now? And this isn't religion. This isn't anything dealing with theology whatsoever. What is the thing that you set your hat on today?
Wow, that's tough because I really don't know. I mean, I don't. That is a tough one, you see, because I don't think I'm any more. I don't think I'm just different from many other people. You have your home, you got your kids, you got your job, you got your neighborhood. I don't know. I don't know what I would hold up. I guess everybody would ordinarily say their family and their kids. I mean, it's great. I really like being a part of the community. You know, I coach my youngest softball team. I'm going to continue to do that. My wife, she coaches the oldest softball team. She helps out with cheerleading for the youngest. So, you know, I mean, we do a lot of these things. We get involved with the kids, and it's one of those things where, you know, she always says, man, doesn't seem like they appreciate it. But, you know, I don't necessarily know that they understand that time sacrifice now, but they're going to grow up. They're going to be in their mid-20s. They're going to have kids. And they're like, wow, mom and dad just brought us to dance class. They coached softball. They coached cheer. I mean, they're going to come and they're going to say, how did you go through and do all that stuff with just 24 hours of the day, going to work, home? You know, it's one of those things. I guess that would be it. I like being a part of the community with my kids and with the family and keeping that going.
You couldn't have answered that any better, in my opinion. That's the one thing that, you know, if I were to ask that question to myself, it would be, I love that my kids are, in quotation marks, normal. You know, it wouldn't matter what other external factors. It wouldn't matter what they were like. But they're well adjusted. I actually got a just. I'm sorry to pull it away from you into one of my kids. I actually got a call from one of my kids, my youngest, my boy. His teachers. He has a speech impediment. You know, he's the thing with the lisp. Got a call from one of his teachers today saying that we may need to bring him in for speech therapy, which we go through every year. I'm like, perfectly fine with me. You know, we work with him as best as we can, you know. And the teacher was like, but I want you to know he is a wonderful young gentleman. He is polite. He says, yes, ma'am, no, sir. he is a wonderful to deal with. All these different things saying, it's just like, yes, yes, I've done a good thing as a parent.
Yeah, see, that's the thing, too, you know. I mean, the kids, they can get a little fresh from time to time, but it's... You know, and the oldest, you know, we have our battles and this and that, but I know that if I let her out of the house, that somebody else's house, that she's polite and she's respectful and she helps out. So, you know, despite how discouraging it might be for her and I to clash, you're like, you know, where is all this respect supposed to be? But she's going out and obviously it's in there and she retains it and... She's the champ.
Well, now, I know you're not a big fan of Richard Dawkins, but there is one thing that he put out that I know that you will agree with, because you just did. There is the idea of a meme. Not a meme like the Facebook meme or the Twitter meme or that kind of thing. It's that packet of information that gets projected forward in time. That's actually, in the strict definition of the word meme, that's what you've done with your kids and what I'm doing with mine. I know you don't want to attach your name, probably don't want to attach your name to Richard Dawkins whatsoever, but in the strict idea of the word itself, that's what we do. You know, you as a father, me as a father, we actually are projecting our ideals forward in time via our kids.
Yeah, and you know, that's a good thing. It's one of those things where I hope it translates into adulthood, where they can keep that going and be successful young adults who make good decisions and turn out better than me.
That's all we can ever hope to do, you know. Oh, goodness. I'm starting to get wistful now.
You're not going to cheer up on me here, are you?
Maybe a little bit. I'm trying to. We came up to the point where you actually decided that you were religious. How did you stumble upon or come upon being a Christian versus being a Jew or a Muslim or any of the other religions in the world?
All right. Well, that was actually one of the responses. Well, what you do is you go and you look at the claims that everybody's making, find out what the claims are and why they believe that those are true, and then you need to go and essentially be critical. So when Muhammad says that he did whatever, and that he's the messenger of God, and you go find out what he says and why he said it, and figure out if that makes sense, if that holds muster. Same thing with the Bible and the Eastern religions, and essentially it's just to test everybody and see what holds up. So once you're fairly convinced that God exists, I think you could narrow it down to what is the most probable, or at least you can disqualify. And I was able to disqualify pretty much the Eastern religions on philosophical reasons. And Islam was easily disqualified through history and the history of Islam and just through the Quran itself. Mormonism is thick, real thick with theological contradictions, even within its own, and just basically how it was formed and who Joseph Smith was. So that was an easy, Mormonism and Islam were the easiest ones to dismiss outside the Eastern religions that are.
So whenever you're thinking about the Christian faith, we'll skip over Judaism. What are your thoughts about Mormonism?
Well, I mean, given the history, Joseph Smith, how he just founded it, it didn't, there was too many internal inconsistencies. So, for example, he says that he saw God the Father. He's cool with the Bible and everything else. However, the Bible says that he can't see God the Father. So you're starting with that. You can see God the Father, but it's only after you receive the priesthood. Well, he claims he saw God the Father before the priesthood. So you have that. That's a problem. Another problem with Mormonism in general, he claims that, for example, I don't know if you're familiar with any of the Holy Scriptures, Doctrine and Covenants, Pearl of Great Price, the Book of Mormon. Book of Mormon, for example, is fairly theologically neutral. I mean, there isn't a whole lot of controversy in there. However, one of the big things is the Book of Abraham. Are you familiar with the Book of Abraham?
Yes, sir.
By chance, it's, I'm sorry?
I said, yes, sir, I am.
Okay, so he claims that he translated the Book of Mormon in the exact same way as the Book of Abraham, which we now know is an Egyptian funeral document. It has nothing to do with what he said that it had anything to do with. So
specifically, so the Urim and Thummim.
Right. So it's, they're all that you can do. So you have to participate. However, if you ever sin again after becoming clean, then all the sins that you used to have come back. So it's just this ever revolving door. You can never get out from underneath your sin to the point where you can't even be forgiven. I wrote an article on this on my page there, basically going over all these different things that you just, it's terrible if you're a Mormon. I mean, it must be according to their own documents.
There are so many things in the Mormon faith, and I hesitate to actually speak to them without actually having a Mormon on hand to be able to, you know, defend themselves and that kind of stuff. I'm sure you can understand. There are so many things inside the Mormon faith that are just, it's just horrible. It's worse than being Catholic. The guilt that faith brings upon their members is just absolutely horrible.
Well, it does. I mean, the problem is you have, I just went and I looked it up here, what the the article that I had written. I'm Marone. And Spencer Kimball, who was a guy in the Mormon church, said trying isn't sufficient and repentance is complete error if all you do is sin. So just trying isn't good enough. Only if you absolutely essentially become sinless can you be saved. It just doesn't work. I don't know how you do it.
Well, even as, you know, as a self-proclaimed atheist, you can't be sinless. That's impossible. You know, I'm sure that even you would admit that. It's impossible to be sinless. That's just not something it's not a thing.
Well, no, because there's things that I do that I know are wrong just before I do it. I know it's wrong as I'm about to do it. I know it's wrong while I'm doing it. And then I'm aggravated that I did it when I'm done doing it.
And
you know, it's one of those things that you just can't shake it. I mean, I don't know. It's tough.
Dude, trust me. Even, again, as an atheist, as a worldview, a humanist, there are things that I do that I'm like, when the F did I do that? And, you know, it doesn't matter whether you're a theist, an atheist, a humanist, or whatever. It's just like, I know I shouldn't have done that, but I did it. Why the F did I do that?
And, you know, and that's a good point that you bring up. You know, that's something that I always bring up with skeptics whenever I come across a discussion about how they don't think God's rules are, or they think your God's rules are a little bit too strict, right? So my response is always, well, listen, even if you make up the rules, even according to your own, you still violate your own rules. And your rules, my rules, I violate all the time. You're not supposed to lie. You're not supposed to cheat. But you know what? There's times at work where, you know what, maybe I could do a little bit more, but maybe I don't. I lied probably a few times in the past week. So even if we were to hold ourselves to our own standards, which we're allowed to set, we don't even pass. We can't even pass our own standards, let alone a perfect one from God. So that in particular, good objection to me, but you see what I'm saying is it's impossible. Even if we're allowed to set the rules, we can't even hold steady. What does that say about us and the human condition?
I will give you that much. Without, you know, without actually giving ground either way on theism or atheism or however we want to couch the conversation, is if we can't actually set rules for ourselves, how can we even think about something higher than ourselves? I mean, you know, it's just one of those things. It's like, well, what's the verse, you know, motes and beams and removing things from thine eyes and that kind of stuff.
well, Jesus is trying to teach you not to judge hypocritically, that we, you know, first get your own affairs in order. If that's the thing you're going to complain about, I think a lot of people try to justify shutting somebody up saying, well, unless you're perfect, you can't come talk to me. I mean, I don't think that's what it's saying, but you're right. I mean, we all have our own issues. It's the human condition. And I think the human condition is a great indicator that at least on that note, the Bible's got it nailed. You know, we are sinless. Deep down, we are truly sinful. We are deeply sinful people who even if we're allowed to set the rules, we can't even follow our own rules.
Well, one of the things that I would like to point out is where you say we're sinful, you actually gave the answer. We're human. That's just
We are rare. It's now part of the human condition, and that's why we need you need redemption. I mean, we even see it. We see it even here. I mean, good evil people need to be punished. People who do bad things need to be punished. I think you would agree with that, right? Would you agree with that? People who do bad things should be punished.
Probably for a different reason.
Well, regardless of the reason, you think that people who do bad things ought to be punished?
I will couch this saying yes.
You're trying to not answer that the way that you know you need to answer that.
Yes, I feel sometimes I feel that yes, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. But not for the same reasons that you may couch your argument with. Yes, I do. I do agree with that. So
sure. And on my worldview, I believe the same thing. I think that people ought to be punished for the evil things that they do. And I think that's another thing that my view has going for me is that you actually get that. You don't get that on your view.
No, that's not. Okay, I'm not going to. Okay, okay. We're not going to do this tonight, John. We'll do this on another episode. Shifting gears. What do you do for fun?
I love to gamble. That's always been one of my big things. Yep. My father and I, we spend a lot of time together. We play a lot of cards. We'll hit the casino. That's just, I like playing cards in general. I'll pick up a game anywhere. Any game that I can figure out how to play, I'd love to play. I play a lot of poker, a lot of blackjack. But I'll play setback. I'll play gin. That to me is one of my true joys. I also love, you know, I really get something out of being in a controversial discussion with somebody. You know, it's I don't know, there's a certain rush there, you know, whether it's a stranger. I try to tread a little more lightly with people that I know that I'm friends with. But strangers, if I overhear somebody talking about some controversial, whether it's political, religious, social, ethical, anything like that, if there's an opportunity for me to inject myself in that conversation, I'll do it. Shy away from it.
You'll put your toe in the water and see how it goes from there.
Absolutely. I don't mind doing that. And what I try to do is I'll say something about as controversial as I could think of just for the shock of it. Then I'll walk it back and I'll try to introduce a more level-headed, reasonable line of discussion.
You know, it's interesting to actually hear you say that because I do the same thing on my side. So it's interesting, you know. I think we can both admit that we like to debate and we're half-ass good at it. it's fun. It's fun to see it on your side, you know, and if the listeners haven't gone back and listened to the back and forth between me and John, we have the same tactics.
Very similar.
We know how to do the back and forth. We've been doing this for a long time, not between John and myself, but between other people. We know it's the fencing terminology, touche.
Yeah.
Whenever we know that we've made a point. Whenever we haven't, and we're good. I would say I can't help but notice that you have Gorilla Glue wood glue on your
yep
right shoulder.
Yes, I do.
Me too. I don't have it on my right shoulder, but I have plenty of it here at the house. What are you using that for?
I rehab old furniture and whatnot, and it comes in handy having to put dresser drawers back together. Dovetail joints are starting to come out. The glue is probably the best glue on the market.
I completely agree. I use that and the actual Gorilla Glue and the Super Glue, all of it.
Their epoxies are great.
You cannot ask for a better product, including their tapes. I love using their tapes, too.
I've never used their tape. I've only used their glue.
I
hear it's great.
Imagine Gorilla Glue, but then in duct tape form.
Yeah.
It'll hold crap together like you cannot believe. And it's actually waterproof, too. So
that's even... You're right. You can't ask for a better product.
You can't. Well, hey, high five, right? Ready? High five. And frozen. Nice bomb.
On my end.
All right. Now, Robert, now that you have something to try to tie in somewhere. So, as we come to an end, John, what projects do you specifically have going on that you would like to promote? Anything at all, whether it's online, whether it's offline, just something that you personally believe in. What would you like to promote?
I would love to get my blog up and going again. You know, that was one of my big joys. Maybe a year and a half ago, I just sort of waned, you know, my interest waned and my motivation for writing sort of went. I'd love to get that back going again. I got a couple of things on there now.
What's that website?
But if I had, that would be Sifting Reality, SIFTING, like you're sifting through flour or something, siftingreality.com.
Can you say that again a little bit slower for the listeners, please?
Sure.
And also, if you send Robert the link, we'll have it in the show notes, but just a little bit slower.
Sure. Siftingreality.com. That's sifting, SIFTING, reality.com. I have pretty much probably have almost 1,000 posts up there over the last 4 years. Anywhere between abortion, atheism, religion, politics, environmentalism, you name it. If it's a social issue, an ethical issue, political or religious, I've probably covered it at one point or another. But if I had some feedback there, that always led to new ideas. It's just one of those things that sparks the motivation, the discussion. Because, you know, like I said, that's what I like. I like having a discussion. And that's probably what attracted me to coming into the podcast, is getting into that discussion again and actually having the interaction, the back and forth. That's what I really enjoy.
Well, as we wrap up, I would like to say that I actually enjoy the conversation myself. So, you know, you and I have probably diametrically world views, to say the least. But you know what? It's actually been really fun just to sit down and have a nice long conversation. And we're, believe it or not, and I think you would admit it, even though we have such divergent world views, we're not so different, right?
No, for the most part. I mean, I think for the most part, all decent people are fairly, you know, they're all pretty similar. There's some drastic, like you said, divergences in their worldview, which shapes how they see things. But I think for the most part, people are looking for the same thing. They strive to achieve the same things. The same things make them happy. Same things make them sad. I think people are much more similar than we give each other credit for.
I think we could probably sit down and have a beer together, right?
Probably.
I would say past probably. I'm pretty damn sure we could sit down and have a beer together.
Different.
And that's it for tonight, folks. I'd like to thank John, George, and of course all of you for joining in on the conversation. Please make sure to like us on Facebook. You can find the links to our page and all of the other associated websites in the show notes. We're now live on iTunes. If you like us, please give us a rating, maybe even a good review. That always helps. If you want to support the show and any of the other projects associated with Rationality Unleashed Media, please feel free to donate via our Patreon page at www.patreon.com/rationalityunleashed. Because we post quite a bit of content, please make sure you set a monthly maximum if you don't want to go over a certain budget. If you want to make a one-time donation to RU Media, please use our GoFundMe page at www.gofundme.com/RU Media. Your support helps us with all of the hosting costs, equipment, and all of the other costs associated with producing quality content across platforms. Your donation is greatly appreciated. Thank you for tuning in, and have a great night.
Thank you for listening to the Atheist Podcast, a production of Rationality Unleashed Media, rationalityunleashed.net, or you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/rationalityunleashed.